Chapter 13, A Forward Move. Printed in the Review and Herald, June 6, 1935. The annual meeting for 1852 convened early in the season, March 12 to 15. Again, it was held at Ballston, New York. Like the preceding meeting of June 1851, it was held at the home of Jesse Thompson, the well-to-do farmer who had opened his home to James and Ellen White the year before. A goodly number of laborers were present. Among them were Brethren Bates, Rhodes, Holt, Wheeler, Day, Baker, Ingram, Wyman, Churchill, Morse, and Edson. And during the last day of the meeting, Brother J. N. Andrews, who had just returned from a trip to Michigan. Brother Thompson and his family had the care and labor of entertaining the large company assembled. Regarding the meeting, Elder White wrote in the Review of March 23, "The brethren came together with a desire to be benefited and to benefit each other, not to establish any peculiar views of their own, but to be united in the truth. The spirit of truth was earnestly desired, and all united in asking God to give His Spirit to guide into all truth, and to guide in judgment while transacting business brought before the meeting. The Spirit of the Lord was with His servants during the entire meeting, and love and union prevailed. The business meetings were pleasant and free. All seemed willing to act, and ready to act in union, and to act now. The word was preached with freedom, and the examination of some points of doctrine touching the present message was conducted in harmony. Friday p.m., the 12th, the subject of publishing the paper was introduced. Several brethren spoke of the disadvantages of having it published as it has been, and spoke of the propriety of having an office at the control of Sabbath keepers. And after investigating the matter, it was decided by a unanimous vote, number one, that a press, type, etc. should be purchased immediately. Number two, that the paper should be published at Rochester, New York. Number three, that brethren E.A. Poole, Lebius Drew, and Hiram Edson compose a committee to receive donations from the friends of the cause to purchase the press, type, etc., and to conduct the financial concerns of the paper. Number four, that the brethren abroad be requested through the next number of the Review and Herald to choose agents in their churches to receive donations for the purpose of establishing the press and carrying forward the publishing of the paper. And number five, that those donations that are immediately sent in should be sent to Hiram Edson, Port Byron, New York. It was thought that $600 would be sufficient to establish the press at Rochester." Enthusiastically, the ministering brethren reported the blessings that had attended their labors. Brethren Bates and Edson related that, in November of 1851, they had crossed the St. Lawrence into Ontario, then known as Canada West. For hundreds of miles, they tramped along the north shore of Lake Ontario as far as Lake Huron, often wading long distances through the deep snow in the heart of winter. Thus they visited interested ones of whom they had heard, and by January of 1852 they had raised up two strong companies, besides winning many scattered believers. Since the meeting of the year before, there had been a great extension of the work. The early companies in New England were rapidly increasing in number and strength. From the West, there came equally encouraging reports. Plans were then laid for strengthening the increasing number of new believers by holding many small conferences or regional meetings. It was also planned that the brethren holding these conferences should travel in company, two working in New York and Canada West, and two in New England and Canada East. The Review of March 23, 1852, the last number published in Saratoga Springs, which carried the report of the conference, contained an article entitled The Paper, in which its financial standing and the necessity of cooperation of all who are interested in its future work were presented as follows. This number closes the present volume and is the last to be published at Saratoga Springs. To those friends who may wish to know the pecuniary condition of the paper, we would say that $150 was raised at the Camden Conference, June 1851, to commence the present volume. This sum, with the receipts since that time, will only pay for this volume. We have been unwilling to receive large donations from those real friends of the cause who are ever ready to use their Lord's money as faithful stewards. And we have hoped that all the readers of the Review and Herald, who have had it placed in their hands with other publications, who profess to love the truths it advocates, and who are able to do something for its support, however small the sum, would gladly help in this work. We hope to issue the first number of the next volume by the 1st of May. And we would say to those who wish to help with their means that their assistance is needed now in commencing the paper at Rochester. Will the brethren be interested to furnish matter for the paper, either original or selected? Let all be free to write. On the same page, there is a report of a general meeting held February 27 in Fairhaven, Massachusetts. In considering the state of the cause, those gathered at this conference made the following statement and recommendation regarding the review. We fully approve the course pursued by Brother White in the management of the paper and earnestly desire that his connection with the paper may still continue, and to relieve him from pecuniary difficulties and to bring some of the burdens more directly upon the church at large, we recommend that the brethren in each place appoint some suitable person to look after the interests of the paper. Number one, to have the charge of collecting money for the paper. Number two, to see that the paper is sent to such as have an interest to examine the truths which it advocates. Number three, to see that it is not sent to such as are not interested to receive it. From the time of sending out this last number of Volume 2 to the issuing of Number 1 of Volume 3 from Rochester, New York on May 6, 1852, there were 9 weeks in which the brethren had no review. At this time, lovers of the paper were beginning to raise money for the purchase of the little publishing plant. During these 9 weeks, James White and Stephen Belden were busy. All that pertained to the publishing work in Saratoga Springs was prepared for shipment. The back numbers of the review, the small stock of hymn books, experience and views, the remnant of editions of a few tracts, and the scanty supply of household appliances were made ready to be shipped. After money was borrowed to pay the freight charges, they were sent forward. In Rochester, search was made for a suitable place to house the family and the printing business. Then, selection was made in New York City of the Washington hand press, the type, and other material which was to constitute the Review and Herald printing plant. This done, Elder White wrote several articles regarding the past experience and future outlook of the cause. In these articles, which appeared in the next issue of the Review, we find much of interest under the heading, The Work of the Lord, which we reproduce here. The Work of the Lord by James White. The work of the Lord that is now progressing among those who are observing the Sabbath of the Fourth Commandment and are looking for the speedy coming of Christ is most cheering to those who have held fast the Advent faith. Nothing can be more encouraging to those who regard the Advent movement as the work of God and have endured the trial of their faith through the time of scattering than to know that the Lord is gloriously reviving His work in bringing out from the world a people united in their faith and hope, joyfully keeping all the commandments of God, waiting for the coming of the Lord. Those who are willing to follow down the track of prophecy to the message of the third angel, C, to the joy of their heart, the providence of God now fulfilling prophecy as to time and manner. Here is the patience of the saints. Here are they that keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. Revelation 14, verse 12. But this work is not confined to those only who have had an experience in the past Advent movement. A large portion of those who are sharing the blessings attending the present truth were not connected with the Advent cause in 1844, their minds not being particularly called to it then. Consequently, they did not reject it. They are now prepared to receive the truth when presented to them in a proper manner. Some of this number have had their attention called to the Advent since the Great Movement of 1844. Others are leaving the churches where they may be free to observe the Sabbath of the Bible and enjoy the Advent hope, and not a few of the precious, tender youth who are being converted help make up this number. The truth has a happy and sanctifying influence on those who heartily embrace it. Our Advent brethren, who participated in the messages of the first and second angels of Revelation 14, who have been unable to clearly define their position since 1844, can now, by the light of the third message, see their whereabouts and are able to explain their present position. The harmony of the three angels explains the Advent movement in the past and shows that those who sacrificed in the Advent cause with sincerity and discretion were doing the will of God. The harmonious truths connected with the third message clearly show their present position and place their feet in a plain path again. And now with confidence, they can again rejoice in the blessed hope of soon seeing Jesus. A brief sketch of the past will give some idea of the rise and progress of the cause of present truth. From the time of the great disappointment in 1844 to 1846, a number of the Advent brethren in different states embraced the Sabbath. But the observance of the fourth commandment was strongly opposed by the leading Advent papers and by the preachers of the Advent, with very few exceptions. The light that then shone out upon the subject was faint when compared with that of the present time. And in that time of confusion of views and scattering of the precious flock, many of those who embraced the Sabbath gave it up. A few, however, stood firm and toiled on amid cruel opposition and reproach from those who professed the Advent faith. One class of opposers of the weekly Sabbath of the Bible taught that first day should be observed, and their main support was not the Word of God, but the so-called Christian fathers. Another class taught that the Ten Commandments were abolished, and still another class admitted that it was right to keep the seventh day according to the law of God, but they taught that all the world had somehow made a mistake of just one day in numbering the days of the week, so that the Sabbath of the fourth commandment fell on Sunday. They were willing that we should observe the seventh day on Sunday, but by all three of these classes, it was generally represented as sinful in the sight of heaven to observe the fourth commandment on the day that Jews, Mohammedans, Christians, and all nations agree is the very seventh. And those who observed the true seventh day according to the commandment were called Jews, Judaizers, and fanatics, and were represented as fallen from grace, committing the unpardonable sin, and hasting to certain ruin. Thus, a great amount of prejudice was raised against Jehovah's Sabbath, so that but seldom one was found that would listen to the Scripture arguments in its favor. And what was greatly in the way of the Sabbath cause was some who taught it in a rash manner, which gave the opposition greater chance to oppose and misrepresent all who observed the seventh day. But it is a matter of rejoicing that such have either seen their error or have left the Sabbath, so that the cause is now generally free from this embarrassment. In the spring of 1848, a conference of the scattered Friends of the Sabbath was held in Connecticut. The meeting was attended with the blessing of God, and the brethren were much encouraged. Another was held in Volney, New York, in September of the same year, which was attended by some of the brethren from New England. The number of believers present was only about 30, yet there was a general attendance of the Friends in Western New York. This was a meeting of great interest to the few tried Friends of the Sabbath, yet it was one of some trial on account of a diversity of views held by some of them on points of less importance. Here the work of uniting the brethren on the great truths connected with the message of the third angel commenced. This work has progressed gloriously, and hundreds have embraced the present truth, whose hearts now beat in union, while their interest is one in the advancement of this holy cause. In the summer of 1849, we issued the first number of the little sheet entitled The Present Truth. We commenced the work under circumstances the most unfavorable, being destitute of means, and the very few Friends of the Sabbath being generally very poor. But soon after sending out the first number, sufficient means came in, and we were greatly cheered in hearing that several of the dear Advent brethren in different states had embraced the Sabbath. About that time, Brother J. Bates visited the brethren in Jackson, Michigan, who received the truth and have since aided much in the cause with their means. Since that time, the cause has advanced far beyond the expectations of its warmest friends. Where there were but about a score of Advent brethren in the state of New York that observed the Sabbath 3 years since, there are now probably near 1,000, and several hundred in the western states where there were none to our knowledge. The increase in some portions of New England has been greater than in this state, and in the Canadas, where there were none in 1849, there are a goodly number that delight in the whole law of God. Notwithstanding all the efforts that are put forth to arrest the progress of this cause, and the bitter opposition that it meets with from Advent papers and ministers, yet its course is onward. The present is a time of thrilling interest to those who have toiled in sadness in past years when friends were few. Such are best prepared to realize in some degree the great and glorious work that God has accomplished for the remnant. The present work of those who are permitted to act a humble part in the advancement of the cause of God should be understood as it is of vast importance that each should do the will of God. We think that the past will give some idea of our present and future work. Thus far, in the progress of the cause, but little has been accomplished without persevering effort. In this respect, we may safely judge of the present and future by the past. The servants of the Lord have cheerfully left their homes and have traveled long distances in the cold and heat to spread the truth before a very few. And as they have seen them yield to its force and made happy on receiving it, they have felt doubly paid for all their toil. Others have freely given of their means to publish books and papers to distribute gratuitously to those who might be benefited by reading them, and to sustain the traveling brethren. And God has blessed the efforts of His children in a wonderful manner. It is true that there are but few laborers in the wide harvest. 3 years since, there was not one that labored constantly in the field. Now there are a few, and the Lord is constantly raising up and sending out others. They must go in the name of the Lord and bear reproach and learn how sweet it is to suffer for Jesus in this cause. And as they go, they must carry with them publications containing the reasons of our faith and hope to hand to those who are perishing for spiritual food. The Lord is opening the way before us. A spirit of inquiry is awakened, and many who have formerly been prejudiced against our views, or indifferent, are now anxious to hear and read the evidences of our position. It lies in the power of those who have this world's good, and those who are able to earn means to spare, to send the servants of the Lord to such, to speak to them the word of God, and leave with them those publications that will aid them in studying the word. This they will cheerfully do when they feel the importance of the hour and the necessity of acting, and acting immediately. Those who oppose the present truth are active and leave no means untried that they think will shut the light from those we hope to benefit. Let us, dear brethren, leave no means untried that will send out light and truth to perishing souls. Let us gird on the armor and go forward in this holy warfare. If ever the children of God should be as wise as serpents and harmless as doves, it is now. They are often placed under circumstances the most trying, and to enable them to maintain their position on unpopular and even despised truths, and always exhibit the meek spirit of their master when bitterly opposed, they need much of the grace of God. Dear brethren, let us look to the great example and pattern, Jesus, and learn to be meek and lowly in heart and in our daily walk.